Bienvenue. Hello and welcome. This is City Breaks Marseille, Episode 3, with a longer title than usual, The Old Port, the Canebière, and Notre-Dame de la Garde. If you know anything about Marseille, you'll realise that those are the three blockbuster sites that you're most going to want to see, the ones you'd go to if perhaps you were only visiting for the day. And because they're clustered together, it's easy to visit them all at once, perhaps for the first morning in the city, or maybe, especially if you're staying a bit longer, you'd spend all day there, wandering around, drinking in what there is to see, and doing everything on the list which I'm going to run through in a minute. I'm Marion Jones, and this Marseille series is the 12th series that I've worked on. There are a number of other French cities, Paris, Bordeaux, Toulouse, some other big hitters like London and Berlin, and then a little collection of classy other cities where there's plenty of historical interest, such as Seville and Edinburgh, and Munich and Bath. Anyway, today we're in Marseille very firmly, and after the previous two quite introductory episodes, it really is time that we went to this trio of very important sites, which between them symbolise Marseille. The writer Jean-Claude Izot, probably the best-known writer in the Marseille Noir genre, was very much Marseille born and bred, and he used to say that arriving in Marseille by boat was his very favourite way to come. Perhaps he would say arriving on a boat from Corsica, or maybe just returning from a night out fishing. But the thing to do, he said, was arrive, if you can, quote, early in the morning, at the hour when the sun is rising behind the massif of Marseille Vert. So a reminder of Marseille's beautiful setting, the sea, the hills all around the harbour, and particularly for this episode, the harbour itself. Going to start with just one or two little bits from history to put the place in context, and then, for most of the episode, I'm going to take a wander around the harbour, mention all the things that there are to see and do. So, apart from just wandering and taking lots of lovely photos, it is the most photogenic spot in the city, I think. There are cafes and restaurants lined up all around it. There's a church it's quite good to pop into, the town hall. Marseille's main street, the Canebière, runs back from the harbour into the centre of the city. There are other things to do, such as, just for fun, why not, taking the little ferry which tos and fros back and forth across the harbour all day long. It's very cheap, I think it costs 50 centimes or something like that. And you will surely also want to visit that beautiful church up on the hillside. If you're looking out to sea, look up to your left, and there it is, Notre-Dame de la Garde, situated on the high point above the city, and topped by an enormous statue of the Virgin Mary, golden. And I'll be talking about that too a little later in the episode. But first, just one or two nuggets of history about the port itself. Perhaps I should repeat that here I'm talking just about the old port, Le Vieux Port, as the French call it, and not the new modern one built off around to the right. You can't see it because it's just round the bend, but we'll be going there in a later episode. But for today, we're sticking to the old harbour, the old port, the one where the Greeks arrived 26 centuries ago, the one which in 1423 was besieged by the Spanish. They arrived in their boats. They ripped off the heavy chain that was put across the harbour every night to guard the city. They stole it, in fact, and you can still see it today in the cathedral in Valencia. A couple of centuries after that, Louis XIV took steps to fortify the city, to build, in fact, two forts, one on each side of the harbour, to protect the people of Marseille, also, I think, to keep people loyal to him in charge of the city and reporting back to him. It was here, too, that the worst thing to arrive in Marseille, probably ever, namely the plague, was unleashed. That was in 1720. The people of Marseille had sort of seen it coming. They'd just finished building quarantine facilities on the islands out in the bay, the Frioul Islands. But, as I'll explain in a minute, they didn't make full use of them, and in this year, 1720, bubonic plague arrived, said to be the last major outbreak anywhere in Europe, and over 50,000 people in Marseille died because of it, as did a further 50,000 living in the countryside surrounding the city. Yes, they had a quarantine system. In fact, they checked every ship which arrived, looked at the captain's log to see whether that boat had been anywhere that was known to have the plague. If it had, then the ship and all the crew and everyone on board would be quarantined out on the islands for a minimum of 18 days. But in May 1720, there came the ship, the Grand Saint-Antoine, which had just been to Lebanon and Tripoli and Cyprus, and on which one Turkish passenger had already died, so it was refused entry to Marseille, quarantine. But on board were vast quantities of silk and cotton, which the merchants of the city wanted because there was a trade fair happening quite soon, and they pressured the authorities to lift the quarantine early, which unfortunately they did, and just a few days later the disease broke out in the city. Soon there were huge numbers of deaths, corpses piling up in the city, acts of desperation, such as an act of Parliament which introduced the death penalty for anybody found communicating between Marseille and the rest of Provence. They built something called a Mur de la Peste as well, a plague wall, all around the city, a dry stone wall 6 or 7 feet high, guarded along its length to stop people toing and froing. There are places outside the city where you can still see little remnants of it, in fact. Another much-talked-about incident happened in 1826, when something that no one in Europe had seen before arrived by boat in Marseille, namely a giraffe. It was a gift to King Charles X from the Mehmet in Egypt. The ship carrying it docked in Marseille after being quarantined. The giraffe came ashore and spent the winter in Marseille getting used to the European climate and, of course, becoming the thing that everybody in Marseille talked about all winter long. Eventually, Zarafa, for that was the name she was given, I think it's the Arabic word for giraffe, in fact. So Zarafa walked all the way from Marseille to Paris to be handed over to the king. The mid-19th century was the period when Marseille really began to grow in importance and wealth. It was by this point the second largest port in France, very busy, so busy in fact that they decided to build the new port, La Joliette, just around the corner, and the city gradually grew into a really important international commercial port. An author, one Alphonse Daudet, passed through in the 1870s and wrote this description of what he saw being unloaded in Marseille. Quote, "A prodigious mass of goods of all kinds, silks, minerals, planks of timber, lead ingots, linens, sugars, carobs, rapeseeds, licorice and sugar canes, the Orient and the Occident, all jumbled together." Its growth was all tied up too with the growth of the French Empire, shipping coming in from the colonies in North Africa and the Far East. And in fact, at the beginning of the 20th century, in 1906, a huge exhibition called the Exposition Coloniale, so the Colonial Exhibition, was staged in Marseille to focus on its role in the economy and the empire. All the economic side of things happens round the corner at the Joliette, and the old harbour then is really the social and cultural centre of the city, the place you're most likely to see on postcards and websites, somewhere you're definitely going to want to visit. So I thought I would spend the rest of the episode running through the sort of things that you can do and see while you're there, starting with the fish market, which takes place at the top of the harbour every morning from about 8 a.m. to 1 o'clock. Not huge, 8 or 10 stalls perhaps, of fishermen selling their overnight catch, but pretty impressive. I read, I think on the tourist board website, the following description of the sort of things which you might be able to buy there. Obviously, not all at once, because it depends on the season and the weather, but they would include, quote, whiting, red mullet, scorpion fish, sardines, sea bream, sole, mackerel and monkfish. And a tip they gave would be to look out for something called the Eye of Venus, or in French, the Œil de Sainte-Lucie, which is a little orange-coloured shellfish, flat on one side, curved on the other, which has markings that make it look a little bit like an eye. And these are bought really as good luck charms. People wear them as pendants round their necks. If you're self-catering, you may well decide to buy some fish. Otherwise, it's still nice to wander round. And if it's fish you want to eat, then you definitely won't be short of cafe and restaurant ideas all around the harbour where you can do exactly that. Just behind the fish market, on the other side of the road, you might spot the Saint-Ferréol church. The one that's there today was built after the revolution, because the earlier one had been destroyed, but it's a site on which there's been Christian worship since the 5th century, all in honour of the martyr Ferréol, who was beheaded for his faith, and the church there today describes itself as a spiritual lighthouse. And if you pop in, you will see that they've got some very modern stained glass windows on a sort of sea theme, wind and waves inspired, I'd say. But the other main thing on the top of the harbour that you're definitely going to want to have a look at is the canopy. It's only been there since 2013, but it's definitely now one of the sights of the city. A huge stainless steel mirrored roof supported on very slender looking columns, which stretches above about half the quayside. A sort of roof space, really, half sheltering the area below, and in which you can see reflected yourself, the traffic going round the buildings, the sea, the sky and the boats, all very Marseille. Definitely worth a look. Quite hard to photograph, I discovered, but perhaps you'll do better than I did. It was designed in 2013 by the architect Sir Norman Foster for a reason, to mark, in fact, the year 2013 when Marseille was the European capital of culture. When the architects were asked to comment on exactly why they had designed what they did, they said, quote, "Our aim has been to make the Vieux Port, the old port, accessible to all. The project is an invitation to the people of Marseille to enjoy and use this grand space for events, markets and celebrations." When I went, it was quite busy, lots of to-ing and fro-ing. There was a flower market in one corner. There were buskers. There were people with little mobile snack stands. And if you want to take a very Marseille-type photo, this is the place where they've set up the lettering of Marseille on a little wall just outside the canopy. Running back from the centre of the harbour is Marseille's best-known street, La Canebière, the central artery of the city, really, a wide avenue whose slightly strange name comes from the Provençal word canebe, which means hemp, because hemp used to grow here and was in fact harvested and used for ropes, for which, of course, in a growing port city, there was always a great need. Of course, there are guidebooks which can't resist telling you that it was named after cannabis, a fact in which there is also some truth. Anyway, the Canebière was in its heyday, which was mid to late 19th century, so during the Second Empire. It was a grand street, think luxury hotels and shops, grand cafes, one or two particularly splendid buildings, not least the Chamber of Commerce, just down from the harbour on the left-hand side, built both to celebrate and regulate all the money that Marseille was making from its maritime trade. I think it's fair to say that today the grandeur has slightly faded, but if you look up at the buildings on both sides of the street, you'll certainly see lots of examples of big old 19th century mansions. And such was its fame that a song was written about it, playing on the fact that Canebière, so the name of the road in French, rhymes with the French word for hemisphere, hémisphère, and making the point that this road was famous all over the world, certainly in both hemispheres. The opening line is, "On connaît dans chaque hémisphère, we know in both hemispheres, notre Canebière." It's where the tourist office is, just a little way up from the harbour on the left-hand side. It's also where various shops selling the sort of things you might want to buy and take home as souvenirs are. I'll be talking more about that in a later episode. And depending on how long you're spending looking around Marseille, you might decide to walk up it quite a little distance, because after 5 to 10 minutes you will arrive in the Noailles district, very busy, very bustling, where off to your right you'll find perhaps one of the most lively and colourful markets in the whole of the city, full of fruits and vegetables imported from all over the Mediterranean, surrounded by a whole host of restaurants. And then a little further up, again off to the right, is the Cour Saint-Julien, St. Julian's Court, possibly Marseille's hippest area. Think graffiti, street art, again, lots of restaurants, food from all over the world. And if you want to go even further, you'll eventually come to the Boulevard Longchamp, where the centrepiece is the Palais Longchamp, a palace built in celebration and as a showpiece in the days in the 19th century when fresh water came right into Marseille because a new canal had been built. And it really is an exuberant building. Little garden in front, huge marble steps leading up to two wings right and left, past some very fancy fountains, presumably to celebrate the arrival of the water. And the wings are used one for the Natural History Museum and one for the Fine Arts Museum. Again, I'll be coming back to that in, I think it's episode 6. Behind the Palais Longchamp, more gardens, statues, flower beds and whatnot, a popular place for a stroll. Anyway, let's get back to the harbour. So, if you're standing at the end looking out to sea, down the right-hand side are a couple of other things you might want to visit. Halfway down or so on the right is the town hall, La Mairie, which I did mention in a previous episode, all about the Louis XIV face on the façade and everything. But outside, there's a second thing to look at, which is just as interesting, namely an anchor statue, a rather strange anchor in that the two bottom parts curve up into the shape of a heart, and there's a plaque next to it in two languages, French and Ukrainian, which explains what it is. Quote, "This anchor in the shape of a heart is the symbol of the city of Odessa in Ukraine and was given as a gift to its twin city of Marseille." And embossed on the anchor, you got a little slogan, the word I, and then the anchor heart, meaning love, and then the word Odessa. And next to it, a bit more recent, a second plaque put there in March 2022, which explains that the mayor of Marseille decided that here, outside the town hall, was just the place to display this anchor in order for Marseille to show, quote, "solidarity with the people of Ukraine and Odessa, victims of war." March 2022, of course, being the month after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Look up at the end of the harbour on this same right-hand side and you'll see one of the two forts built by Louis XIV, the Fort Saint-Jean, which is the one of the two which you can actually visit. I think you can get in from the harbour side. You can certainly get in if you go through the Musem Museum just along the coast a few hundred yards, because there's a footbridge from that leading back into the fort, which actually does make a very nice walk with wonderful views. The fort dates right back to the 12th century originally, when it was built to be the command post of the Hospitalier of St. John of Jerusalem. It was from here that the Hospitalier used to set out on their journeys to the Holy Land, and they built here a chapel and a church, a hospital and a palace for their commander. The big round tower, La Tour Ronde as it's called in French, was added in the 17th century when Louis XIV was beginning to think about using this site as a lookout post to see exactly what was going on in Marseille, which was a bit more important and certainly too far from Paris than he really liked. And actually the next thing he did was take the site for himself by expelling the Hospitalier. It was used after that for quite a while as a state prison, and during World War II it was taken over by the Germans, who used it as their ammunition depot. Today it's one of the most visited monuments in Marseille, equally I think for the history and the views. And also just there beneath the fort is the rather ugly looking concrete block which the Germans built as a field hospital, and which is today the Museum of Deportation. Again, I mentioned that in the previous episode. So, once you've looked at all of those things and perhaps crisscrossed the harbour on the little ferry, you're almost certainly going to want to take Le Petit Train, the little train, which leaves from the right-hand side of the harbour. There are two routes, in fact, one of which I'll come back to in next episode, because that takes you up to the northern half of the city, which is known as Le Panier. And the other route is the one I want to focus on today, because that takes you round the harbour up onto the hill on the southern side of the city, right to the top, where you can get out and visit Notre-Dame de la Garde. So that beautiful church which is sitting up there overlooking the harbour with the golden statue of Mary glinting in the sun. Really a must-see, I would say. It's a wonderful sight from the harbour, and even more so when you get up there, you can imagine what amazing views you get all over the city of Marseille and along the coastline. I came across a tourist board description of Notre Dame de la Garde, which defines it as an emblematic figure of the city of Marseille, which watches over her sailors, her fishermen, and all her people. It's also known, in fact, as La Bonne Mère, which means the Good Mother. So it's very much the symbol and the protector of the city. It was a holy site centuries before the church which you can see there today was built. For example, there was a sanctuary dedicated to the Virgin Mary there in the 13th century. There are various accounts of royal visitors arriving. For example, in January 1516, when François Ier, so Francis I, one of France's best-known kings, arrived. He was on his way back to Paris, having won a major battle in Marignano in Italy, and he stopped here. In fact, he met his mother here, Louise of Savoy, and the two of them went up to the church to give thanks. It's said that while he was there, he looked around and thought that the city of Marseille was very poorly defended, and it was at that moment when he decided that he would order a chateau to be built on the islands in the bay, the Château d'If, as we call it today. More royalty a century later, when Louis XIII rode here, accompanied by quite a procession, but including his sister, Madeleine de Scudéry, well known in her own right as a writer, who described the visit in her journal, writing, for example, "Last Friday, you could see the citadel covered from head to foot with 10 or more flags and the bells of the tower swinging." She went on to explain that they took with them a statue of the Virgin Mary, quite a heavy one, which they got 8 people to carry for them, as described thus in her writing. "The statue of Notre Dame de la Garde, holding in her left arm the naked child, and in her right hand a bouquet of flowers, was carried by 8 shoeless penitents, veiled like ghosts." I should have mentioned that, of course, you can take the petit train up to Notre Dame, but you can also walk. There's a footpath signposted from the harbour, and if you choose that route, you might like to just wonder what it would be like to do it without any shoes, as these penitents did in the 17th century. The church that was there was, you've guessed it, very badly damaged in the Revolution. Revolutionaries arrived one day, pretending they were coming to Mass, but in fact they swarmed the church and took it over. There were various incidents after that. On a Trinity Sunday, a year or two later, for example, the churchgoers tried to have their traditional procession up to the church, but they were stopped by demonstrations, during which the Virgin Mary statue was wrapped in the red, blue and white tricolour flag, and they put on the head of the baby Jesus one of those little red caps, I think they're called Phrygian caps, which symbolised the revolution. So in short, they did whatever they could to mock religion and say that they didn't think much of it. They used the place as a prison too. Louis-Philippe, who was the cousin of the King Louis XVI, who was beheaded, was imprisoned here, for example. And eventually they closed the church down completely, nationalised the site, rented it out, auctioned lots of the contents, melted down the statue of Mary, and generally wreaked havoc. It was reopened for worship under Napoleon just a decade or so later, in 1807 in fact, and it continued as a popular site for visitors and pilgrims, and so in the middle of the 19th century it was decided that really the basilique that was there wasn't big or grand enough. Marseille was just becoming very wealthy because of all the maritime trade. This was the period when the stock exchange was built, for example, and so it was decided that a big new church would be built on this site. They engaged an architect with the wonderful name of Espérant Dieu, which sounds very much like the French for have faith in God. And actually, it's a name that you might see. I noticed a couple of boats in the harbour actually called the Espérant Dieu. Anyway, he did Marseille proud, and the church that you see today was the result. I've seen its style described as Romano-Byzantine, which I think means a mix of the old Romanesque style, so the pre-Gothic style of church, mixed with Byzantine, so influences from the East. Think cupolas and lots of colour, mosaics and whatnot. And it really is quite a sight, not least outside, where you can get close to the tower, on top of which stands that enormous statue of Mary, put in place in 1870. More than 11 metres high, weighs 1,000 kilos, or almost, and it's made of copper and then gilded with gold leaf. And inside, quite a dazzling sight, really. Lots and lots of colourful mosaics. I think I read that 12 million tiny square tiles were used in total. Different coloured marbles, golden cupolas, a Roman mosaic floor, and, movingly, lots of votifs, which are little marble plaques with messages and prayers on them, many of them left by sailors or in memory of sailors. And outside it's quite splendid too. You can walk all the way round. There are plaques marking various historical events, including the eye-catching one I think I mentioned in the last episode, where bullet holes in the façade are explained as being left over from the battle for the liberation of Marseille, which took place here in August 1944. It was the last place in the city where troops fought with the occupying Germans before they left. Some French troops, but actually largely Algerian troops, I think. Algeria, of course, in those days was a French colony. And there's a second plaque which really spells out how important an event this was for the city. It reads like this. On the 25th of August 1944, on the feast of St. Louis, King of France, and the days which followed, Notre Dame de la Garde managed to prevent the destruction of the church and deliver the town and the whole region from German occupation. One thing which sadly you can no longer do, could until about the year 2000 I think, but they've stopped it, and that was the possibility of climbing inside the staircase right up inside the statue of the Virgin Mary, right up to her head, at which point you could look out over the sights of the bay and the harbour. Not allowed anymore, I'm afraid. But things you can still do if you go up at Christmas, make sure you visit the Crèche de Cent Ans, which is a big crèche, a display of the locally made little models that are very popular all over Provence, which portray the Christmas story. And I read too about something which began only in 2023, but which it is hoped is going to be an annual event. And that is something called the Bénédiction, that means blessing, des motards à la basilique, of motorbike riders in the church. They met, apparently, by invitation at the Hôtel de Ville, so the town hall. They rode then en masse up to the church, where a service of blessing was held. The other thing to make sure you do outside the church is to find the map of the coast and the city on which all the things that you should be looking out for are labelled. So that'll make it easy to pick out the Frioul Islands and the Château d'If and the Calanque, the little coastal coves. Whether you decide to walk down or take the petit train, you will surely enjoy what you see, because you'll be going through one of the more opulent parts of Marseille, lots of grand villas there with lovely gardens, and you will get spectacular views of the Corniche. Perhaps you will spot the Palais du Pharaon, which was built in 1858 by Napoleon III, who was emperor at the time. His wife, Eugénie, had said she wanted a house by the water's edge, and this is the site they chose. Sadly, in fact, they never lived in it. I don't think, in fact, they ever visited it once it was finished, because by 1871, the empire had fallen. They had both fled to England. Napoleon died just 2 years later, in 1873, at which point his wife, the empress, decided she would give the building to the city of Marseille, just stipulating that they should use it for public purposes. It had various incarnations as a hospital and a medical school, and today it's a conference centre. But the gardens, which are magnificent, are open to the public, no charge to get in, I don't think, and it's said that this really is the best place to see the harbourside fireworks on July the 14th, Bastille Day. Anyway, do make a point on the way down of just enjoying the spectacular scenery. To finish, I thought I might read a very short quotation from one of Jean-Claude Izzo's books. This is the first of his Marseille Noir trilogy, the volume called Total Chaos in English, in which one of his characters is actually in a hurry and on a detective mission, but he takes a moment to just pause somewhere here and look out at the scenery. And this is what Jean-Claude Izzo wrote. He could see out over the harbour, the whole sweep of it from Lestac to Pointe Rouge, with the Frioul Islands and the Château d'If. Marseille in cinemascope. Beautiful. Exactly. Don't miss it. And once you get back down to the harbour, if you're not going to do a bit more lingering and photographing and eating, you might decide that's a good moment for a boat trip. I'll put links in the notes and on the blog post, but basically there are a couple of options. One would be to go out to the islands of Frioul, with or without a stop at the one with the Château d'If on it. I highly recommend that, and in fact I'll be talking about it in a future episode. And the second option is a selection of trips along the coast to see the Calanque, a whole series of little inlets, mainly reached by climbing down cliff sides. So you can't get there by car, you can only get there on foot or by boat. And it's an excellent way to get a sense of this part of the coastline and put Marseille's harbour into context. Again, I would definitely recommend that. So then, that's today's episode. Don't forget to have a look at the blog post, where you'll find a summary of everything I've said, plus lots of links and photographs. In the next episode, I'll be exploring the other side of the harbour, opposite to Notre-Dame-de-la-Garde, Le Panier, where there are lots of interesting things to see and do as well. For the moment, though, I hope you feel much better informed about the harbour and its surroundings, and, of course, Notre-Dame-de-la-Garde and the Canebière. And it just remains to say thank you very much for listening, merci pour l'écoute, and goodbye until next time. Au revoir, à la prochaine fois.